happy. In every life
we have. This is Gail Moskowitz, and thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters. Since I grew up with the last name of Shookoff and married a man whose last name is Moskowitz, I have to say I am more than happy to have anyone mispronounce my name as long as they don't forget to invite me for dinner occasionally. Anyway, on today's show, we are going to discuss adolescent substance abuse and treatment options. I thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters. And any time that you would like to be in touch with us today, please call 804-649-9737, 804-649-9737. As you know, Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality, and hopefully discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. Each week, we highlight an issue, as we will highlight adolescent substance abuse and treatment options today, and then you, the audience, will have the chance to call in, weigh in on the subject, or ask a question. Remember, Mental Health Matters comes to you every Monday at 1 p.m. on WRIR. That's 97.3 FM. You can also listen to the program in real time by logging on to WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. The show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all the rest of the past shows. You can log on to my website, which is mentalhealthmatters.web.officelive.com. Of course, if you get on to WRIR's website, you can just click on my show and my website will miraculously appear, which is really pretty cool, I think. I am happy also to send you a link to my site, and I ask you to please feel free to send me your comments, questions, or suggestions for a future show at yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Those are the letters yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com, all one word. So for today, we're going to discuss adolescent substance abuse and treatment issues, and I really invite you to call at 649-9737. Now, one more short announcement. Next week, I'm excited. I'm going on vacation. I'm going to go visit our adult daughter. We all are. We're going to go visit our adult daughter in Germany and then travel to Poland, where my husband's father actually grew up. It's exciting, and I'm excited. And you guys are lucky because Dr. Vicki Van Cleave will be a wonderful substitute for the show. And this week, while we're talking about adolescent addiction, she's going to highlight adult addiction issues. So I hope you'll tune in again for Mental Health Matters next week, 1 o'clock on Monday, when Dr. Vicki Van Cleave will be here substituting for me. Today, we are hopefully going to make sense out of the topic of adolescent substance abuse and treatment options. My guest is Barbara Burke. She is a licensed clinical social worker, and she's the clinical director of an organization called Family Counseling Center for Recovery. That's in Richmond, Virginia. They actually have two locations, and we can talk more about that later. If you'd like to have any questions, if you have any questions for her today, please feel free to call 649-9737. You know, as with so many difficulties we human beings face, when a problem confuses us, we have the habit of either ignoring it in hopes that it'll go away or literally beating it up. You know, I love that analogy of hitting the fly with a large hammer as it strolls across the sliding glass door. That's what it feels like we do in this country with addiction. And I know that Barbara cannot make this problem go away, but she is here today in hopes of helping us make some sense of the options that parents and children have. For a woman who has done this taxing work for the amount of years that you, Barbara, has done this work, your passion and care for these families really inspires me. And I want to say that I really thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show. We'll get right to it. So tell me what brings these adolescents into your office.
Typically, adolescents come in because the parents are having a concern. Sometimes there's a legal issue. They've gotten in some trouble. Very often, parents are just frustrated by their attempts to intervene and the kids don't seem to be responding. So we get a real range of concern and a real range of where they are in that process.
So the parents come in with their children, and they're just stuck. And often they've tried this or they've tried that.
That's right.
So I don't know. I was just thinking about it when we were talking about this the other day, is, you know, for as long as I know, adolescents have had substance abuse issues. Is it different? Are you seeing something different today?
Well, in some ways, yes, and I'm not sure what is causing the difference. I do think that with the availability of a wide range of pharmaceuticals, we're running into a whole problem with pill use and, in some case, addiction. And then we're getting into medications and drugs that are much more addicting than the pot that the kids are usually smoking. In this town, that sometimes leads to heroin addiction, which is appalling for a lot of people, but the rate of that for middle-class teenagers, in my view, has gone up. But the other thing I'm seeing is that I think more teenagers are coming to treatment, more young adults. I'd like to think that some of that's public awareness of the availability of treatment. A lot of the young people we see are themselves children or grandchildren of alcoholics, and I'm glad they're in treatment. Some of that is because of the family's concern, and some of it is because of their awareness of treatment options. And I think there is a lot more early intervention going on, which to me is very exciting.
Oh, yes, that is actually exciting. I hadn't thought about that. So, you know, certainly not every child who experiments with drugs or alcohol is an addict. When do you define it as a problem? Maybe you could tell us what's normal.
Okay. I know it's disheartening to parents to hear, but we most adults know that a certain level of experimentation and maybe even social use is not unusual for teenagers, and I don't think abnormal. It is illegal. It does pose dangers. I don't want to minimize that, but I don't think that that necessarily means that they are on the road to addiction or that it will be problematic. It's really not that complicated. If the substances are causing problems in your life, school problems, family problems, health issues, keeping you away from activities you used to be excited about, getting in the way of the goals that you'd once set for yourself, and I think we would begin to define it as a problem. Then we have to start distinguishing between abuse and dependence, and that, for me, is something that takes time. I'm reluctant to overdiagnose a young person. If we're wrong, we have turned them off to the whole idea of treatment. We lose our credibility.
I want to stop you.
Yes.
First, I want to say out loud that if anyone would like to speak to Barbara today, please feel free to call her at 649-9737. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. This is Gail Moskowitz. My guest today is Barbara Burke, and she is the clinical director of Family Counseling Center for Recovery. They treat adolescent substance abuse, children and families with substance abuse issues, and she's here to talk about treatment options. Barbara, tell me what the difference is between, you said abuse and addiction. That's interesting. I'm not sure I've heard that before. Tell me what that means.
Okay. There are clinical criteria, medical criteria that we use to distinguish, but I think the simplest way to look at it, when I see a teenager who is getting in some trouble or the parents are distressed about their use, I think in most cases, because it's illegal and they're doing some risk-taking, then most all of adolescent substance use is abuse. I just think they're pushing close to that line. If a family attempts to intervene, if a kid has had some consequence at school or with the law and continues to use, then we're really getting concerned about their ability to stop. Because at that point, these are usually bright, creative kids. They should know better, but they don't seem to be able to make the decisions they need to make. I'm a little reluctant to put that label on a young person, but we'll begin to talk about it. I want to educate them so that these kids may be able to go on to self-diagnose as they get older, when the signs may be more evident. So sometimes this is just our first attempt to intervene, and we know quite well that if this is the beginning of the addiction process, it probably will require several interventions. and a little bit of time and maturity before the teenager or young adult can wrap their brain around this and make the changes they need to make.
They come back, is what you're saying.
Well, we
hope
so.
And if you don't turn them off, they're more likely to come back.
That's one of the things that I've learned. Unless there's a real danger, and sometimes there is, kids are wildly out of control, putting themselves and others at risk, addicted to opiates, and there's all sorts of concerns about that. But in a lot of cases, I think it is a intervention, education, and trying to help the families be able to talk about it themselves.
I have a question. But first, let me just say that if anybody has a question for Barbara this afternoon in regard to adolescent substance abuse and treatment options, please give us a call at 649-9737. Do you see something different between the way in which boys use and the way in which girls use, or is it all the same?
You know, that's hard to say. I would say that in terms of our adolescent treatment program and the more intensive program that treats kids that may be in early addiction, we see far more boys than girls. It won't be unusual for us to have six or eight boys and one or two girls. However, I'm not sure whether the girls somehow have avoided the consequences that bring them into treatment, but the consequences that girls have are heart-wrenching. They are things like sexual assaults, you know, loss of self-esteem, relationship issues, things that may not come up on the police radar, but they are devastating. And so a lot of these girls are living with trauma. At young ages.
And shame and isolation.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it's no less of a concern for the girls.
I do have another question, which is, you know, I have so often heard that people don't think that marijuana is addictive, but I've never really agreed with that. So tell me what you think. What's the truth about that?
Okay. I think you could get information to substantiate any opinion you want to have on this, because I think there's two different schools of thought. With marijuana, there's no medical treatment for the withdrawal of marijuana. So from a medical perspective, I think we think it's not addicting. But for that matter, there's no medical treatment for the withdrawal of cocaine. And yet people that have abused cocaine or crack will tell you how addicting it can be. We argue whether it's psychological or physically addicting. I don't think that matters. If you think you need the substance, then you need it, and you're going to do what it takes to get it. I believe that addiction is not in a substance, it's in the person. It's in the chemistry, it's in the thought. And so if you're someone that tends to be addicted or get addicted and you have that chemistry and pot is the thing you like, then absolutely I think you can get addicted to pot. We see kids that smoke it all day, every day, and have really convinced themselves they cannot function without it.
You know, I'm not young anymore. I'm in my mid-50s, and certainly when I was in high school, there were lots of kids who used pot a lot. And the thing that was true for those kids then and is true now is these are children who lose their motivation. And that's the most heartbreaking thing, because they don't even know it's happening. It's so seamless, and it's really hard to engage them in treatment, in my mind, because they've lost their motivation to see the world in a bigger way.
Absolutely. And that is my passion about treating young people. Even if they think pot's safe and they think they're going to want to smoke it again, I really am not ready to have that conversation with a young person. It's really more about, what are you going to do now? If you're in trouble, what I would say to them is, it's been a while since you've remembered what it's like to not be high. And I think the decisions about life can't be made under the influence of pot or any other drug. So what I would do is challenge them, and we have different groups that we could use if they need the assistance, challenge them to have a few months of uninterrupted abstinence and let them figure it out. And it's really interesting how when kids get, it takes 4 to 6 weeks sometimes, but when they get a distance and they can look at the bigger picture, very often they can decide for themselves. They can get their energy back. They get their motivation. They begin to remember the things that they once were excited about. They remember how good it feels to get along with their parents and to succeed. And so that's my challenge, is to just give it a try, knowing that if life is, and the other thing is that we can give them a chance to see what else is going on. If they stop, they're abstinent, and things don't get better, then we can look at mental health treatment, maybe even medication, if there's something going on there that they're self-medicating.
Actually, that is a question I have, is tell me about what medical intervention you all use at the Family Counseling Center for Recovery. I just want to say that this is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. My guest today is Barbara Burke. She's the clinical director of Family Counseling Center for Recovery here in Richmond, Virginia. And we're talking today about adolescent substance abuse and treatment options. Please feel free to give us a call if you have a question for Barbara at 649-9737. So the question is, what is the medical intervention that you all use at the Family Counseling Center for Recovery?
It obviously varies. With a lot of the teenagers we're seeing already are in therapy or seeing a psychiatrist. They may have been diagnosed with a bipolar disorder, anxiety or depression, ADD. In fact, we're getting more and more referrals from those doctors or therapists who are finding that they cannot properly treat a teenager if they continue to use illicit drugs.
So that is a way you get referrals,
absolutely,
too. Absolutely. Okay, that's really good to hear.
Yeah, and more and more, because I think they're recognizing that their attempts to treat are futile if the kid is using. And I think also families spend an enormous amount of time in family therapy fighting about pot when they could be moving on to working on some bigger issues. So we'll do an assessment of the substance abuse and any other psychosocial issues they might have. We'll communicate with the referral sources. If they don't have a therapist, a psychiatrist, I want to see the kid clean for a month or so. And if certain symptoms persist, we might recommend a consult with one of our psychiatrists. We certainly work with a lot of psychiatrists in the community that work with teenagers, and consider some medication management. There's controversy about that, but our thoughts are if they're going to be pulled right back to alcohol, pot, and other things to self-medicate, then what a doctor might prescribe would be the safer option.
Well, there might be an underlying mental health condition,
absolutely,
that really needs to be treated, like you said, like somebody who might have bipolar disorder.
That's right.
So tell me about treatment. How do you help adolescents and their families?
The first step is an assessment, and we always include the parents in that and take time with the adolescent alone as well. We generally do a drug screen and scan for the quantity of marijuana, so we can get a sense of how chronically and how intensively they are smoking. And certainly we're screening for other substances as well. For a kid whose life is really spinning out of control, we or they suspect this could be addiction, lots of consequences, multiple attempts to treat, we would probably put them in the intensive outpatient program. It's very much like our adult program. They come 3 afternoons a week for 3-hour groups. Parents must attend the Monday group with them because we feel like a lot of the work that has to be done is going to be done with the family at home.
Even if the child is 18 or 19 years old?
Well, 18 or 19-year-old, if they're in high school living at home, we treat them as an adolescent because we feel like they still need to repair those relationships before they can go on. But an 18 or 19-year-old that's individuated, going off to college, we probably would put them in an adult program.
I don't even see children without substance abuse problems as being individuated at 18 and 19.
Well, that's the point. And so my feeling, even though some of them feel all grown up and all that, you know, I feel like I want to keep them adolescent a little longer because I think that foundation and repairing that relationship is going to be the roadmap for future relationships.
So anyway, I interrupted you and I didn't mean to. Finish telling us. So you put them in these intense groups. They come 3 afternoons a week for 3 hours?
Well, that's only a certain population. These are the kids who have probably failed at other forms of treatment. They are in trouble and still can't stop using. Some of them come to us from residential programs, as do the adults, and we're treating them to help them re-enter society and deal with the daily triggers. So usually those kids have already had other interventions or are really posing a danger to themselves with their use. And I will say that we don't hesitate to refer them to residential treatment if we feel like they are too out of control, if their behavior is problematic, they cannot, if we don't think they can get from one group to the next without using or harming themselves or others, then we would make other recommendations. But a fair amount of the kids that come in are not really in that ballpark yet. They're using, maybe the parents have caught them more than once. They may have gotten caught early on in their use, but they otherwise have other coping mechanisms and other areas of their life are still rather intact. Those kids, sometimes we just ask them to not use and come back in a week or two, and we can revisit the issue and retest and see how they've done if we're not sure. But we offer them an early intervention group, and that group meets weekly for an hour, and a parent has to attend the group with them, both parents if they can. And it's 8 to 12 weeks, including drug testing, and what we're doing is just opening a dialogue. And particularly for kids, even early on in their use, who have a family history of addiction, I think this can be really helpful because we talk about the difference between use, abuse, and dependence. We help them learn how to communicate openly about it, and we also help the families learn how to talk about it without freaking out so that the kids will possibly talk to their parents if they're having difficulty with it.
So let me just reiterate. Mm-hmm. You help parents talk to their children about these issues without freaking out so that
right.
the children might find a way to ground themselves in a relationship with their parents and find their parents a resource as opposed to the person they need to protect themselves from.
That's absolutely right. What we start with is to try to talk about it and stop fighting about it.
I'm going to say one thing, and it's only because it happened this morning. I saw this woman this morning, one of my clients this morning, who has a young adult who has drug and alcohol problems, and she keeps trying to find the reason that the child has drug and alcohol problems. And you, when we were talking about this on Friday, you said this, and I want to make sure we don't miss it. You said to me, the reason a child has drug and alcohol problems is because they have the disease of addiction, not because their mother made them wear a black shirt when they wanted to wear a white shirt, or their mother was, mad at them on a Tuesday night once when she was in 10th grade. And please speak to that. I want people to know what the disease of addiction is.
Okay. I think, and I think the majority of the field of addiction today believes that addiction, if that's what we're treating, is a medical problem, and it is a chemical imbalance, if you will. I'm not sure I like that word, but that the chemistry of people who become addicted is different, just like the chemistry of a diabetic is different, the chemistry of someone with high cholesterol is different, there's evidence that genetics plays a big part in this. And it's interesting because in my 30 or some odd years of doing this, I see genetics as playing an enormous part, even higher than the statistics claim. So that's the education we start with, is that if this is something that, if this kid has a parent, grandparent, biological aunt or uncle who struggled with addiction, then we need to open their eyes to the fact that this is possibly what we're dealing with. So just like with cancers and diabetes and heart disease, we're really trying to do the earliest detection, and we don't always know. So if it is addiction, it's something that you didn't cause, you can't fix it, you have to treat it. And the treatment for addiction is abstinence. So it doesn't have to be life-threatening, and it doesn't have to cause the consequences if we can intervene early. Unfortunately, sometimes it takes the consequences for people to really want to get clean and sober.
So you treat people who really are not, you would not consider having people who are abusing substances but may not really be addicted to those substances
right.
in the way that we see addiction.
Yeah, and those are the folks that we would treat with education. We challenge them to a period of abstinence. We do a similar program with our adults if maybe they got in a little bit of trouble, but they're not really addicts. So we're challenging them to maintain abstinence to see if they can and to see what happens when they do. And then we begin to, we educate them, and we help them learn the early warning signs, and again, give the families tools to talk about it. So if this 16-year-old 2 years later, goes off to college and encounters problems, that he might call his parents and say, you know, I think I might need more help now.
Just answer this question. So today, if Mrs. X goes and finds pot in Justin's drawer, what should she do?
Well, she might ask Justin about it. Again, asking. I think that sometimes we are so quick to react that we don't really stop to listen.
Do you believe in drug testing? Do you think parents should make their kids get drug tested?
I have real mixed feelings about it. I think that when drugs have already shown themselves to be a problem, and abstinence is what they've agreed upon to drive the car, to stroke a check for college, family history of addiction, I don't think it's a bad idea, but that's not the relationship most parents want to have with their kid. So I think that really depends on the situation.
That's probably a whole other show. We can talk about that.
Yeah.
So a couple of things that I would like to talk about to come to some closing today, and that is, do you send these children to AA? Do you send parents to Al-Anon?
It depends. If this is very early on in the process, we don't push in that direction. We are very strong proponents of AA and NA and the other 12-step programs for adults. With adolescents, we cannot account for who they will meet or what will happen when they go to a meeting. So it's a little bit shady to push that. We certainly educate them about it. We leave it up to the parents. We do encourage Al-Anon and Families Anonymous. And I just wanted to say, in terms of the pot in Johnny's drawer, one thing I want to mention is that, again, lots of kids will smoke pot if it's passed around at a party, if the opportunity presents itself. The fact that Johnny already has his own marijuana and he's keeping it at home indicates to me that he's already stepped up a notch. And I would recommend that they at least have that taken a look at.
So if it's in their drawer, the kid brought it there, he bought it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
At another point in time, I'd love for you to come back. I want you to tell me where kids get drugs because there's really a lot more to this picture. What I want to say to my listeners right now is, if you have questions that you formulate after the show today, feel free to send me a note. My email address. It's UR Mental Health Matters. That's all one word. Your Mental Health Matters. The letters UR Mental Health Matters@gmail.com. If you want to be in touch with Barbara Burke, the number for the Family Counseling Center is 354-1996. There's also on the south side 419-0492. But I'll have it all listed on my website, so please feel free to just look at my website, get all that information, be in touch with Barbara. Thank you for listening today. I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your summer. I'm going to be on vacation. Vicki Van Cleve will be here next week. I can't thank you enough for being here today, Barbara. You're wonderful. Thank you all for listening, and tune in next week for Mental Health Matters.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now.